Folks, if you'd like a copy of my best-selling first book, Tales of a First Round Nothing, head on over to ecwpress.com. If you'd like a copy of my second book, Tales with TR, Fights, Film, and Folklore, head on over to www.flankerpress.com. If you'd like either copy personalized, just add a note. Thanks for listening to my podcast, and happy reading.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to episode 193B of Tales with TR. Let's get right into it. My next guest was an OHL standout with Sudbury and Kingston before moving on to a decade-long NHL career highlighted by a Calder Trophy as the NHL's Rookie of the Year in 2004 as a member of the Boston Bruins and tying the Toronto Maple Leafs franchise record for wins with 37 in 2006-2007. These days, he co-hosts the Morning Brew podcast and analyzes the game for the New England Sports Network. He is an amazing analyst, a fantastic father, a cool co-host, a gifted goalie. He played real well in the OHL. Round five was his fate to the Bruins in 98. Wouldn't you know, over a decade in the show. Hey, kid, don't frown. He won a Calder in Beantown. He was a leader and a chief when he played for the Leafs. I'll make a claim. He's an ambassador of the game. He's on Morning Brew and is a great father to folks. I like my crosswords hard. I like my eggs soft. Please welcome to the show. It's Andrew Raycroft. Andrew, how the hell are you doing?
Hi, I'm wonderful. And that is as good of an intro as I've ever had anywhere, anytime. So I appreciate that immensely. That is wonderful.
You deserve it, my friend. I got so many places to go. We're going to do a part one and part two with you because we got about a half hour here today. And you're extremely interesting, not just your hockey part of the game. I want to know, first of all, you're growing up. Did you grow up in Belleville or were you born there?
Belleville. Born and raised. Parents still live there. Sister still lives there. Born and raised. Yep.
Okay, so, and growing up, did you know you were going to be a goalie? Like, who were your idols? Was it music, you know, and you just developed into a good hockey player in your interests when you were 14 or right from 5 years old? Give me the pads. I want to be a goalie.
No, I was right in between that. So I was around 10 or 11. I like scoring goals. I was a little player. And for whatever reason, at the end of one season, my first novice year. So my first year of novice after that, I decided to be a goalie and made that wonderful life decision at the age of 8 or 9 or whatever it was. And it was more just, I just liked the gear. I liked being out there all the time. I liked having more, even if you scored 8 goals, you didn't really have the game on your stick, so to speak. So I remember being annoyed when we would lose and feeling like if you're a goalie, you can help that a little bit more.
Ontario is a hockey hotbed and Belleville isn't that far from Toronto, which is the world's hockey hotbed, I believe. If you talk per capita players coming out, did you play with or against any NHL stars in your minor hockey? I don't mean once you got to like under 17 selects. I mean, like on your Belleville teams, did you come across any NHLers?
Yeah, we grew up. So we had AAA came to my area. Quinny Red Devils started up when I was in Pee Wee. So that's really when we started. And I was in the OMHA. So we played Peterborough and Lindsay, York Simcoe, Ajax. The big one that I played against all the way up was Mike Fisher. He was in Peterborough. We were the same age. We went to Sudbury together in the OHL.
I was going to say, you guys were junior teammates, no?
Yeah. So Mike and I had a connection basically since the age of 8 and all the way up until him playing in the NHL with Ottawa. So as a 19-year-old. So he left me in junior. But Mike Fish was a guy. Rico Fatta was the stud growing up. Yeah, I remember Rico. Fatta was the Wayne Gretzky at that time. And you would see he was a man child and he would run us all over. Those are the two, but Fish was the real connection. Of course, lots of GTHL guys that we ended up, you know, playing games or making it to the NHL, but Fish was the one in our league that we played a lot against.
Did Fisher's junior play resemble his NHL? Like, was he good two-way? Was he a good leader in the room, or did he develop that in the NHL?
No, he was built. He built that really quickly, right? In junior, so he was still a third round pick in the OHL, like not a stud. And then what was the second round pick, a third round pick? I don't remember in the NHL, but again, like he showed up in Sudbury and he just got better every single day. And then his second year in junior, he had 110 points. He was big and strong now and could fly and could shoot and was just so responsible all the time. Just a good person too. Like that guy that was, you could tell he was going to do anything he could to get there, but also do it the right way. No knuckleheadness. And that's why he could play in the NHL as a 19-year-old.
Interesting. Was that a good place? We obviously, you know, we shoot Shorzy there, but it seems like the perfect size for a junior town. We go to all the games, whatever games we can. I mean, a lot of games. Yeah. And more often than not, it's sold out. The players seem to be treated really well. Not too big, not too small. It's not that far. People talk to me like I was going up north, like it was 10 hours. It's a few hours from Toronto. But in the OHL, that would be a road trip for you guys. The Dub, that's in your division. Like, in your division is, I was at Tri-Cities. Prince George was 14 hours, I think. Kamloops, Kelowna were like 8 and 9. That was in our division, right? Yeah. Travel wasn't quite the same in the O.
No. And we, the Sioux had it worse than us. We were second worst. But you're right. It from Belleville, it was 6 hours. So it was a long ways when you're 16, 17, but at the same time, you weren't in Thunder Bay. It wasn't unmanageable and it wasn't like you didn't see anybody for the whole entire season. So, it was a great place. And like you said, you spent a lot of time up there. It's a perfect junior place. Friday night, the old Memorial Garden, that's what everyone does. And that's where everyone goes. You got the Wolf coming across on the clothesline.
Oh, yeah, it's still going.
Oh, the best. And we had a great group of guys. I played with that team had NHLers. We had Taylor Pyatt. We had Derek McKenzie. We had Mike Fisher. We had myself. Ryan Barnes played in the NHL some games. So we had a really good group of young kids. And it was we didn't have issues at school. Everyone kind of liked us. We were respectful on the other side. So it was a great place to go up and play 2 years of junior. It was,
I noticed played on your team. I played with him in the minors and I thought like the way he presented himself in practice, I thought this guy's going to be a sniper. He seemed smart. He was skilled. Konstantin Kalmykov.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely.
I was like, God, this guy's got he's got a serious gift, and he never really translated it. There was flashes of brilliance. I didn't know where he played junior. I checked it out today, and I'm like, oh, okay. And he had almost way over a point a game. Anyway, I thought Konstantin was a fantastic minor leaguer. I don't know whatever ended up happening to him. But up there in Sudbury.
I haven't heard that.
I know. I played with him here in St. John's.
Yeah, he was a beast. Like he was a monster, a 19-year-old kid. Like when I went up there, it was my first year. I was his last year junior. He was a beast and should have dominated much more. Jonas Soling was another guy that the other Euro, and they lived together. And I think they stayed up like all night talking to their buddies back. Like I think it was one of those deals where they were like, they went off on tangents and never really just like dedicated it and didn't have enough talent to get away with not doing that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, listen, we got to skip through some stuff here because we only got so much time. Now, you go from there, and you were what in the O? Were you third, fourth round pick? What?
No, I was seventh to the O. So I was like, yeah, 112th overall. Like I was.
Then you go fifth round to the Bruins, but yeah. I looked like you're playing in Kingston, and within a year you're playing on the Boston Bruins. Now, most people don't see that coming, and I remember being nervous as a first round pick, but there was a far more of a development phase. And I, I remember just thinking, you know, just go out there, get it, dump it in. As a forward, especially as like bottom six winger, you can kind of blend in, but there is no way, there's no way to avoid it. You're in goal for the Boston Bruins. Tell us about that experience.
Well,
how did it come to be that you played so quick? Wasn't there some injuries?
Yeah, exactly. It went really quick. So like you said, in 1997, I was a seventh round pick to the OHL, right? In 1997. And in October of 2000, I'm playing in my National Hockey League. That's how quick it went for me. I was a small kid. I kind of grew late and everything kind of fell into place. Had that good year in the OHL at the end. And then, like you said, I came out of camp as a 20-year-old being the starting goalie. So John Graham fell off a curb in partying at the one night off we had right at the end of training camp, right? TR, like everyone blows it out. You're doing 2-a-days for 2 weeks. We went out in Boston. I'm out with everybody, and he just tripped and he blew his ankle at 2 a.m. in Boston. So he's out, so now I'm the backup. So I backed up game one. Game two, we go to Philly and we're winning 5-1. And Byron Defoe comes out of the game with like 8 minutes left in the against the Legion of Doom, up 5-1 with a hamstring pull. So that's on a Saturday night. I go in, I play 8 minutes, and then Monday afternoon, Columbus Day weekend in Boston, I'm the starting goalie against the Florida Panthers because Bizey's out and there's no one else. So that's how quick it happened. It was shocking.
And I don't even know. There's layers to this question, but okay. So that's a situation where you've got to, I mean, I don't know. I liken it to maybe a pitcher in baseball, but more so than everybody else, I'm thinking you got to really calm yourself down. You've got to, like, it's so mental. Like, a little off topic, but you see guys like Jack Campbell or Samsonov this year. Yeah. And sometimes they bounce back, sometimes they don't. But they're both, Campbell, I believe, was an all-star a few years ago. Samsonov, first-round pick. Even some of those years in Washington that they said he wasn't developing, he still was pretty good if you look at his numbers. So it's clearly there. Now, the other thing is sometimes it's just bad bounces. Puck comes from the point, it tips something, it goes in. Now, what if six of those happen in a game and they're not your fault? But now you've let in six. So I don't know. How do you hold it together? Did you have – there was a guy, Wayne Hollywell, and he was a sports psychologist, and I wish at the time I'd talked to him more. He helped me with the transition afterwards. I mean, I got hurt at 23. By 25, I'm done. And I remember thinking, I wish I talked to him a little bit more at the time because it was all eyes on me. And you're Boston, Toronto, same sort of thing, Montreal – but I never really used them when I had to. Did you have a goalie mentor? Did you have a sports psychologist that you could talk to for times that, you know, similar to what the boys went through? I'm sure you had some ups and downs. You're in the NHL for over a decade, but obviously there was ups and downs. Did you have someone to talk to?
No, and I'm similar to you. I wish I had done it more. I was, like you, just a little ahead of that time where it was something you did. And those guys that were around, I always was friendly with and would talk to, but at the same time, like that, you know, the guys would always talk, get that guy out. You know, we don't need that guy around. You can't talk to that guy. You don't want anyone knowing weakness or thinking that way. So I never really had that. I had my family's very supportive. I had great family. I had great friends. I was pretty balanced in my life as much as a 20-year-old can be balanced, I suppose, away from the game. But, I believed in myself. I was naive too. Really, really naive when I look back. Like it was like, I'm going to do this. No big deal. Like it just didn't seem like a big deal at the time. I'll get out there and do it. And I look back now and laugh like how crazy it is that I was 20 doing that and how hard and how few people get to actually do that now that I'm 44 years old. But at the time, I thought everyone, you know, that's just what everyone around me does. My buddy Mike Fisher plays. Why can't I play? And it was one of those things where there was a lot of naiveness to myself and my game.
Sometimes that can really help. Now you get rookie of the year, but a couple of the was it the previous year? I think you played 15 games, right?
Mm. Yeah. So So that was I was right at the edge of, and I'll be probably the last or the oldest rookie, probably last, like, cause that was right before the lockout where 18 year olds didn't play, like 20 year olds, like it was really hard to get in the league. And if you did get in the league, then you're not going to put up points cause you're on the third line. And like you said, you got to dump it in and chase it and fight and do whatever else to get respect that way. So I was right at the end before the lockout. I had played 10 games at least when I was 20. Like I played right. I was up until Christmas time that year. And then the year before, at the end of the season, I kind of made it. I had made the NHL. I blew my groin out with like 2 weeks before playoffs because I was going to play in the playoffs that year as well. I had to miss the time, miss the end of the season. But I think I, like you said, I had 8 or 9 games that year. So I was up to like 20, 23 games career going into that rookie year. So between that and the seasoning in Providence, I didn't feel like a rookie, but I was able to take advantage of like the 27 game rule or whatever it was.
I find often a career, you know, in a hockey game, I guess would be a microcosm of it. There, you know, you ride the momentum often. You often ride momentum. And as a career goes, you try to ride momentum. So you have that big year and it's an NHL lockout.
Yeah.
How did that affect, it wasn't just you, of course, the whole league, but especially for someone coming in and finally coming out and having an outstanding, I mean, the rookie of the year in the NHL is almost overwhelming, but if it's me, I want it to keep going so I don't have to think about things.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about it for a year. And now I got to go back. And it would have been a weird way to, because coming into that, you're a bit of an underdog. Now you've got to prepare yourself after a year off, I'm guessing. I mean, of the NHL, I know you played, but you know, you got to come in with a different, so how was that mindset and did that lockout affect you at all as a player?
Yeah, big time. And again, another one of those, when you get older, the hindsight, I didn't prepare well enough. I didn't want to be the rookie again, right? Like I had done that. I had worked really hard to be and get through the minors and not have to do it. But if I could grab myself, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I would tell myself, you got to act like you're a rookie again. You got to do it all over again going into the lockout. Cause basically everything changed. The equipment, the rules, the league, the people, yeah, the players, everything changed. But I wanted it to be, I was in the NHL. And I think my mindset should have been just roll it right back to, all right, I'm starting my career all over again. And you have to act this way and you have to do all of this stuff rather than trying to feel like you're validated in the NHL. So I didn't have the best mindset in hindsight in that I needed to grind again. And just, if I had kept the momentum, if that was the way to keep the momentum, was to grind and it crushed, of course, I would have been so much better off if we just had that summer to work out and train all year in Boston, very normally go into the season. Cause I was worried about a sophomore slump. I thought about it a lot. I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be the flash in the pan, and the lockout delayed that and made me think about it more. If I had just jumped in the next September after a short summer, I think I would have, I feel like I would have been better off, but again, that's not an excuse. It was on me to grind and be better again.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. New customers can bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets, only on DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
Now, look, I'm jumping all over the map, but there's a few things I really do want to know. You played 72 games 1 year with the Toronto Maple Leafs, okay?
Yeah.
And even though that's fairly recent history, I don't know many goalies that happens anymore. That was the last of an old school kind of way of thinking, where you'd have your number one and then you'd have your way down number two, maybe get less than 10 games played. Now, I don't know, you might split, 45, 38, whatever it would be. So what do you, is there a right and wrong? Is each situation different? As a goalie, what would you prefer to play almost, would you rather play 90% of the games or 50%?
Well, at the time, I wanted to play all the time. You can't do it nowadays. I would have been better served if we could have had a backup goalie there that won five more games, we would have been easily in the playoffs, right? Like, I think I got all but 5 points that entire season for our group, and that's too much. You look at all the best teams, that second goalie gets 30, 40 points for you over the regular season, and that's why they're the best. So no, that's long gone. You can't do it now. The way the game's played, again, back then it was, even after the lockout, there was still a lot of slappers down the wing. There was still a lot of plays just directly in front of you. Now it's so east-west, so fast. I can't imagine a guy surviving 72 games nowadays. You would just blow. Something would go. Either your brain or your legs at some point. And I was exhausted that year. Like, at the end of the season, I must have been a shell of myself when I look back and what I look like and what my body was and my mental capacity for playing in Toronto and doing that every day it hurt a lot.
72 games is one thing. 72 games with a team like Toronto with such a
there's
a critique around every corner. I mean, there's one thing to be supported, but you're also going to hear a comment every single day on how you play, and you're only as good as your last shift or game.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of Toronto, so does anybody actually give you shit that they, indirectly, you come to Toronto, Tuukka Rask goes to Boston, Tuukka becomes, well, and again, I'm not, Andrew, you had an unreal career, your rookie of the year.
None of these years were
you like bottom of the barrel, like you were a great player. Yeah. I just mean, there's something, in Leaf lore or in Boston lore, whatever you want to look at, how they got Tuukka Rask. Do you ever hear about that from fans?
Well, I get it here. And of course the big irony is that I'm back here in Boston and I'm around the Bruins. I see Tuukka two or three times a week. Cause we're the next town over, we skate together, whatever it is, golf together. Like, that's what's really funny now is as we're 20 years away from it. This is what I say to Tuukka all the time. And this is complete honesty, is that I saved Tuukka Rask's career. Like, I look at, like, if I had a stuck around and I knew Zdeno, if I had stayed here when Zdeno Chara was here, that would have been better off for my career than going to Toronto. So I look at it the way that I made Tuukka what he was because he got traded and Justin Pogge had to stay in Toronto and couldn't get his feet off the ground. So
it's
an interesting trade. There's lots of dynamics to it, like Justin Pogge. Like, there was another guy there that they loved in Toronto. And if they had traded Pogge, he was the Canadian superstar at that time. People would have went nuts for that too. So, unfortunately, I can't explain myself with that all the time, and I have to kind of eat it. But I was really defensive about it, really sensitive about it, of course, at the time. I was only 26, 27. Still trying to play in the league. I didn't want it, but now it's funny. Now it's, it is.
And you're both great.
Part of my life.
Great, you're both great former Bruins goalies. You had that 1 year even in Toronto, 37 wins. I didn't realize that. I mean, you got a lot to be proud of. It just so happened, and especially, they win the cups and he's the goalie.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I get it, man. Toronto can be, as can Montreal, but scathing, but in the end, I don't know. I can't say. I mean, I didn't. Dave, when I go back there, I just feel a sense of love for hockey. I whatever happened, I got over it personally.
Yeah,
and I do respect those things. Yeah,
Yeah, it's very. I would assume. It sounds like, and I think we have the same feel. Like, there was times where there was resentment there, and now it's, well, how lucky I was to do that. How few people actually get to put that jersey on. And at the time it's hard, right? Cause you're young and you just want to you just want to kill it and everyone for love you. But, again, I think as time's gone on here, I've realized how lucky I was and to be able to be a Leaf alumni and a Bruin alumni, like, that's, You know, that I hold in the same reverence as a Canadian alumni. Anyone who's a Canadian alumni is you're pretty lucky to be that, no matter what or how long
that's,
it was.
That's the way I look at it now. Exactly. I got this question. I mentioned you're going to be on the pod, and a couple of people sent me some questions. And one gentleman named Mark, who's from Peterborough, he said, did you go to the NHL draft?
I did. I did.
So, fifth round, because a lot of people now, for me, I don't know, if I knew what the cards were going in, it wouldn't really bother me if I went and I didn't get drafted. Maybe it's a bonus. What was your mindset? Because the draft was close, right? It was in Buffalo.
Correct.
So, of course, it's right there. Why wouldn't you go in one sense, but on the other one, you don't want to be disappointed? I mean, what was your mindset there?
Yeah, no, again, being naive, I just like, oh, I'm going to get drafted. I'm on the list. Someone will pick me at some point. But Jesus, again, I dodged another bullet. I was fortunate that I didn't go to like the combine. I didn't go. I only had like two meetings maybe with teams. Boston was one of them. Like I really felt like all the way through, Boston really liked me. I knew they went to a bunch of my games. Uh-huh. I knew I had a good interview. Like I did the interview and was excited about that. And again, it just kind of worked out. It was a really long day that first round. I mean, you were lucky you were out of there in within a little bit of time.
Oh yeah.
First round was really long.
That first round takes hours and hours. I try to tell people, I'm like, it gets pretty monotonous in that building.
It's really, really, really painful. And then at that time there wasn't like the, you know, and then you still had second, third, fourth, fifth round. And I had that fifth round with the Bruins circled. If I hadn't have gotten picked at that point, because there was a lot of goalies going off the board, I think I was still like the 12th goalie picked in 1998, something like that. Like there was a lot of goalies going off the board. And if I hadn't have been picked by that Boston pick, I would have been crushed and I might have left the building at that point because it was getting strenuous. And then, of course, you have some family, my parents, my sister, like everyone else is waiting. I can only imagine how annoyed they were that they had to sit through that. But again, like everything, you know, when you're there that you don't think about that once your name gets called, and it's pretty cool to have been in the building now and turned out to be worth it, I guess, even if it was the fifth round.
So now as a goalie, more and more, it seems goalies, maybe it's just me, but it seems there's a lot more strains, a lot more tears. A lot of guys miss a lot of time. Is it overtraining? Has the league gotten to the point? Or is it overtraining, or has the league gotten to the point that there's just too many games played? Or because I see these young goalies and they're in wicked shape, but they're maybe they're not, but they're training. They're like 16, 17. They're going to, you know, skate with them all here. They're going over to major junior or college or wherever. And I'm like, are these guys? And they look like Greek gods. Yet it's like Giancarlo Stanton. I often say, He's built like a Greek god, but and the Yankees got him, and he hurts himself last year swinging. Yeah. When you hurt swinging, I don't know. At this point, isn't that what you're supposed to do? And you look at a guy like Phil Kessel who sets the record. Now, I'm not saying that Phil's training is the training regimen of choice, where it should be, but is there a happy medium, and is there anything to goalies overtraining, or is it just the demand nowadays, and that's, you know, you just got to be ready for that?
I think you can be on the ice way too much, and as a goalie, you talk about those kids, they're getting hip surgeries at 16 and 15 years old. It's crazy. Like you have no chance of making it. And if you're getting, you know, no one wants to deal with guys that have hip problems and hip surgeries. So don't go on the ice 12 months a year. Don't be butterflying 360 days a year and doing post integration and driving into posts. Like, it's so bad for your body. And there's absolutely something to be said. Of course, we can't get away with being, you know, doing Marty Brodeur and not training all summer. Like, you can't be the greatest of all time if you're that now. But there is a happy medium where you can have a little bit extra on your body that it's not perfectly chiseled and everything isn't so wound tight that you're blowing out all the time and reps. It's, you can take 6-8 weeks off. It's not going to make a difference in how much better you get. And at the end of the day, it benefits you when you're 15 to take some time off, but they just don't do it. And that's where the overtraining really sets in, I think.
Thought so. A couple of players. So Patrice Bergeron came in as a rookie when you were there, right?
Yeah, we were roommates.
I'm just curious, as a hockey fan, I really, really look up to that guy as a player. I think he's, as good as he is, I still think he's like underrated. I think you could put him like one of the best of all time. I don't know about Mount Rushmore, but he's way up there because of everything he brings to the game. Did you see that? Was that confidence there? Was that two-way player that seems to command so much respect without even saying it? Was that there when he was a kid?
It was. And I don't think it, you know, there's, it certainly wasn't like, wow, this kid's a Hall of Famer the first time he stepped on the ice. And like you said, up, you know, he won't ever be considered Mount Rushmore, but he's going to be, I think he just continues to get more regarded as this goes on or gets away from it. But as an 18-year-old, he didn't speak very much English. He was very, very self-conscious about it. We were roommates. It was just me that he would talk to. Like it was, we were pretty, pretty quiet. But it was his, willingness to get better was so evident at 18, like so mature to watch and sleep and not mess around and take everything very seriously, but in a way that endeared you to him, not like a Captain Hardo, Captain Superman. Like he was the captain that, and a leader in that you actually, he was one of those guys that could bring you in to do more with, because of his mindset and because he cared and because he loved it so much. And, you know, just like Sidney Crosby, like it just, all of those guys are the same. And Patrice was like that as an 18-year-old. You knew he was going to be an, it wasn't going to be an 18-year-old and done. You knew he was going to play in the NHL for a long time because of how he handled himself and was that kind of a teammate at 18.
Good to hear. So do you still do some side coaching with University of Connecticut? I know you were...
Yeah, no, I was there when okay. I first finished, but my kid just got too old and it was just too hard to do. So not a lot of... Like I'm on the ice with my kids all the time doing coaching. Okay. And my older guy's a goalie, so I kind of do some goalie stuff with him. But most of it's I'm pushing pucks around and giving kids hugs out on the ice.
I see. Do you like analyzing the game? Do you like, you know, talking about hockey stories, whatever it is? I mean, you know, you got a podcast, but what do you like? Was this an ambition of yours? Did you know that you were going to get into this, or were you like, I want to be a carpenter after hockey?
Yeah. No, I wanted to be a carpenter. I wanted to be something else. And I tried a few other things. I took some sales jobs. I got my real estate license, all the normal stuff.
I did that too. Yeah.
That people, you know, you think people do in the real world. And I, by the time I got through like my third or fourth gig, one, I realized I don't want to do 9 to 5 and my family doesn't work very well and I'm not very good at it. And then two, I just got lucky enough that I was back here in Boston and, just kind of got in the mix with the alumni. And then the TV stuff came up and I tried it and I wasn't that good at it, but I was like, this is kind of interesting. Like it's something that can give me something to get better at. And I do enjoy being around hockey guys again. Like I, again, with all that Toronto stuff and the Tuca and everything, like I was pretty self-conscious about it, but then getting back in the mix and seeing everybody and realizing that no one really cares and no one's really thought about me. And it's just, one of the guys. And I realized that this was the best way for me to get back in the game. And I really kind of jumped in and tried to get better at TV and tried to get better at telling stories and communicating and analyzing. And it's snowballed and it's gotten to the point now where I do it a lot of it and really enjoy it and love going to the Garden now and seeing a bunch of people that I played with, whether they're, you know, whether it's the Canadian coaching staff and it's Alex Burrows and Roby and Marty St. Louis, all guys I played with, and seeing them around the rink doing other things. It's been a great way for me to be back in the game. So I never thought it was going to happen. Like you said, I wanted to be a carpenter, but I'm not good at anything else.
Wow. Yeah, I see what you mean. I went through that too. I was a sales rep for a little bit and then, took the real estate license and I just, my heart wasn't in it. And people then, some people were calling to see a house just so they could meet me and talk about hockey and which normally wouldn't be bad, but I felt like I'd rather just not be the real estate agent, talk to you about hockey at the bar or at the coffee shop, but I felt like a conduit for some hockey fans that don't really want a house. They just want to have a chat. I don't know. It was a weird, the whole thing was curiously weird, but I'm glad I landed where I did. Now, look, I got to go, but I got I just got one last question. So you finished your career over in Europe, Italy and Sweden, I believe.
Yep.
How did you like that experience? And do you still have any connections with people over there?
I do. So I went over in the lockout, I went to Finland, and that was the first time I'd crossed the ocean, and I loved it. And I told myself that I wasn't going to, at the end of my career, whenever that was, I wasn't going to toil back in the AHL. I was going to go over there and have an experience. And, as it does for almost everybody, the time came for me in the NHL, and I still felt that way 10 years later, and I wanted to go to Europe. So we did. Went to Italy the first year because I didn't want to get into – I was burnt out. I was really burnt out, and I thought Italy would be a great chance just to kind of play hockey, not too serious, but live downtown Milan. Like, we lived in an amazing place in Milan, and it was awesome. And then halfway through that year, I was like, okay, I got one more year, kids. We can't do it anymore, but I want to play some serious hockey. So got in touch in Sweden and went way up north in Sweden, which was, again, we had just had twins, so we had little babies, and we just kind of hung out in a small little Swedish town all winter, and I loved it. So
the town? I used to practice. I used to go in the off seasons to Västerås.
Oh yeah,
up northern Sweden. Myself and Brad Brown, who was another OHL grad. We would go over. We needed to work on our skating. The Habs said we can go anywhere. If we approve it, you can go wherever you want. So they would have sent a skating instructor here. I went to see Laura Stamm one year in Toronto, or in Brock University, St. Catharines. Yeah. But we settled on two years. We went over to Västerås. Peter Popovich was from there, who played in Montreal, but Nick Lidstrom and Tommy Salo. It was a great experience. We were there for most of June and part of July. So did you enjoy it up there?
Yeah, loved it. We didn't, unlike June, you don't see the sun. It's the exact opposite. But no, it was great people. As you know, great culture and just a great way of living. Like small town Canada, how I grew up. That's what it felt like up there. So again, loved it. Just a great experience and stay in touch with a lot of those people up there.
It must have been hard. Now, it must have been hard. I can't speak for it. When I played, my career got cut off early and way earlier than I had kids. But how do guys be getting traded and signing in different places year to year with 3 and 4 and 5 kids? It must be extremely hard, and it's something I never talk about on here.
Yeah, it was. And that's really what I remember, taking a bus trip right around Christmas time in Sweden, and I'm staring out the window thinking, what the hell am I doing? Why am I putting everyone through this? My little guy, my older guy was 4. We had twins that were 1. My wife's sitting at home by herself a week before Christmas. Like,
why
all the cousins
putting everybody
are playing
this.
It's really what it came down. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. So, so it was hard at the end, with the kids, because all the decisions you make, right? When you're single, you're just like, it's just about you. And then when the family comes in, the wife's pretty good. Most wives just go with it. So you're in the same spot. When you have kids and kids that recognize what's going on and understand and kind of have a voice, it gets, you feel guilty. So at the end I felt guilty. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. We got 2 months left and it's time to hang them up. I probably, if I was single, I probably would have done it 2 or 3 more years because it's easy and whatever. But when it's the kids are involved, to your question, it does change the dynamic in a big way, and it makes it harder to stay in the game.
No, well said. Now I got to take off, but I'm going to do your pod. Now I'm going to go get my my girl from school. Come back, we'll do that, and maybe we can do a part 2 sometimes. I wanted to get those questions in, but there's so much else that I'd like to talk to you about, and I'd like to get your opinions on some things that are current in the National Hockey League, but we have, maybe we'll do that maybe during or going into the playoffs. Do you have anything to plug? Do you have any companies or teams or any gear or anything to promote?
No, I appreciate that, but no, I appreciate talking to you in a little while with Clearing the Crease with Commie and C-Ball. We're going to have fun doing that, but I'm happy to jump on anytime, TR. This half hour flew by. It was fun.
It really did. And I'll see you again in just a few minutes. Thanks again, Razor. Raycroft, really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Radio.
Okay, buddy. That was Andrew Raycroft. Folks, thanks for tuning in. That's going to be part one. He's a real interesting guy, but duty calls, and I have just head to Fort St. John, B.C. tomorrow. I've got a busy day ahead of me. So what I want to remind you all is if you're in St. John's, Newfoundland, and you go to George Street, why not stop in the Trinity Pub, TJ's Pub, Rob Roy Confusion, Greensleeves Pub, the Martini Bar, of course, the Bull and Barrel. If you're going to go for a bite to eat, why not do it at Loose Tie, Merchant Tavern, or Blue on Water, and, of course, Wedgwood Cafe. In the East End on Elizabeth Avenue, Wedgwood Cafe, who also do catering. Check out Peter Wedgwood, Wedgwood Cafe. If you want strength and balance for the body and mind, look no further than Ryan Power, Power Conditioning on Rope Walk Lane. Strength and balance for the body and mind. If you want to go to Mr. Lube, there's two locations here in St. John's, Newfoundland. One is on Torbay Road, one's on Kenmont Road. Live, laugh, lube, Pitbull Pain Relief. Pain sticks that just don't quit. Go to pitbullpainrelief.com and see what all the fuss is about. True Hockey. Take what's yours. Folks, I'll be back in just a couple of days with more Tales with TR. Thanks to Andrew Raycroft. Thanks to you guys for listening, and I'll catch you on the rebound real soon.